Hi, and welcome to This Is Calm and It's Doctor. I am your host, Monica.
And I'm Tanner, and this is a Criminal Minds podcast.
And today we're going to be talking about the very first episode of Criminal Minds, Extreme Aggressor. This episode premiered on September 22nd, 2005. It was directed by Richard Shepard, written by Jeff Davis, and the main cast includes Mandy Patinkin from Princess Bride fame, Thomas Gibson of Dharma and Greg fame, Lola Glaudini, Shamar Moore from Young and the Restless, Matthew Gray Gubler from 500 Days of Summer, and Alvin and the Chipmunks. He played Simon.
I never knew
and,
that.
Right? and Kirsten Vengsness. So, to set the scene of the first episode, a little bit of background about the characters as we're coming into the episode. So, Aaron Hotchner is married to Haley Hotchner, and they are expecting a child. Jason Gideon teaches, and Spencer Reed is, like, his TA, kind of. The relationship isn't quite explained, but it seems like he's a TA.
Yeah, he's definitely hanging around the school.
He was, yeah! He was there for sure. Derek Morgan is the eye candy.
Can't argue with that.
Listen, he's a great character, but we all know why he's there.
Yeah, and honestly, he looks great in this episode. It was a note that I made.
Yes, he does. The suit.
Then he had a little bit more hair than he does in later seasons. Did. And it looked good.
Yeah, it did look good. And then we have Penelope Garcia is the technical analyst for the FBI. So, this episode opens with a woman in an office, and she is chatting on a very prehistoric instant messenger from 2005.
Yeah, the technology is so outdated.
It's crazy. She is talking to someone, about test driving a Datsun Z. And I actually restarted my latest rewatch because of the Nissan commercial that shows, like, all the different kinds, and one of them's a Datsun. I was like, Datsun Z, Criminal Minds.
Oh my gosh. I don't think I ever even realized that's what the car was. I have a bad car repertoire. I don't know anything.
It's, like, one of those random things that just stuck with me. Mm-hmm. But she is talking to a guy about test driving a Datsun Z, and she meets this man for the test drive alone. And listen, we're not here to victim blame, but we are going to tell you what the show taught us not to do.
I was just going to say, after watching the show all these years later, that woman would never have made that same choice.
Nope, sure would not have. Yeah, exactly. This show gives you defensive preparedness. Like, this is going to give you the answers that you need to the questions you didn't know you had about keeping yourself safe.
Any possible scenario that could happen to you has happened on the show.
Yes!
So you're just always aware.
And every time I watch an episode, I'm like, okay, how would I get myself out of this situation? Mm-hmm. they go on this test drive, they're driving around talking, you know, blah blah. And, when it gets to the end of the test drive, she's, like, checking out the car, and then he gets back in the driver's seat to drive her either home or back to the office. And when she gets in the passenger seat, you see him put his hand, over the window, and he takes out the locking mechanism, the little, what's called.
Yeah, the thing that back in the day before we had electric locks, they, like, shot up mm-hmm. next to the window, you know.
Yes, those little locks, he takes that out in a very sly kind of way, like, you know that it's showing, like, she didn't see it, but you did. Mm-hmm. So he takes it out, and then he shuts the door on her, and he gets back in the car, and then he starts driving off, and she's like, oh, this is my turn. And he doesn't turn. And so she starts becoming aware that she's in a dangerous situation. And she's like, let me out. And then she looks. She sees that the lock is missing. She goes for the door handle and bam, he punches her. And the song just swells as it's happening.
You know, it's funny because the first note that I wrote when I was rewatching this was the music. It feels like a different show. Like, it's very noticeable. Yeah, they were still finding the groove, I think.
They really were. It was interesting song choices for the first episode. So then it's fade to black, and we do not get the title sequence in the opening, the very first episode. We have no title sequence, so that is something of note. It's probably like a pilot thing. There's not really footage to make a title when they're putting out the pilot. That's because you can definitely tell that. Yeah, you can definitely tell the difference between the pilot episode and the next episode because there's an entire new character. But we'll get to that. So the first person that we meet on the team is Aaron Hotchner and his wife Haley. And Aaron is mostly in the show goes by Hotchner or Hotch. And he seems to be putting together a crib, and you can tell that Haley is pregnant, and they're talking about baby names. They're looking at baby names, and Haley mentions the name Gideon, which is the first mention we have of anyone named Gideon, and Hotch says, absolutely not. The next person that we meet is Derek Morgan. He is out for drinks with trainees from the FBI, quizzing them on serial killers and cases that they've worked on. And then he gets a phone call from the BAU, and Gideon is mentioned again, this time bringing up the town of Boston as if something happened there with him. The girl says something like, BAU, do you work with Gideon? Were you with him in Boston? Like, that kind of thing. And then the next person to be introduced is Gideon. And Gideon is teaching a class about profiling, and the subject is the footpath killer, an active serial killer in Virginia. And one of the things he had of note about the killer when he was giving the profile was not to be surprised if the killer had a stutter. At this time, Spencer walks in with a case file, and Gideon follows him out of the classroom as Spencer explains the case is the Seattle Strangler. Which
I have two things. One, that name feels familiar, and I'm sure it's only seen this episode 100 times, or because it sounds like it's something from SpongeBob.
Right?
And the stutter thing, I wrote that down because I'm like, okay, ultimately, spoiler alert for a show that's 20 years old, he's right about it. But like, his explanation is that he attacks women off of hiking paths and in isolation, and so he's a lack of confidence, and I'm like, does that mean stutter? Like, that just, I just figured right. that he's like weak and like scrawny.
Right.
But you know, he wasn't stutter. Wrong, so what do I know?
We see Gideon and Reed walking through the halls talking about a profile. We get to an office, and Gideon talks about giving a profile when Hotch walks in, and he says, Gideon, you're coming with us. And it's the first mention of Gideon being on medical leave, and talking about, so we know something's there, you know, like something's off with Gideon. We know that he's been brought up two times. Something happened in Boston, and this is his first case back after medical leave.
Yeah, they're kind of like dangling to get you hooked.
Yes, yes. Get that little trail of breadcrumbs. So they are getting on their plane, and a woman tells Hotchner that she wants an assessment of Gideon, talking about that they don't need to know if he's ready for the field. They just need to know that Hotchner's there if he needs to step up. So basically, Hotch's secondary assignment on this case is to assess the mental state and capabilities of Jason Gideon, who is the unit chief. Next thing that happens is that they start to discussing the case on the plane, which is a very common theme throughout the show.
I actually, when the part like right before they get on the plane, they're boarding, and that scene where Hotch is having that conversation with that woman, I was like, are they already in Seattle? Is there no plane scene in this? But yeah, I was wrong. They're on the tarmac. Shit, I was like, were they that off script already?
Right. So they're going over the case, talking about different aspects of the profile. Which is one of the more interesting parts of the show, is the connections that they make with things that you wouldn't really see. They make it make sense, you know? Like, they make the little things that they make up make sense to a profile. Like, not that they make up profiling, but they make up the character that they are profiling. Mm-hmm. And, which is, like, a whole other layer to writing. Like, how do you go backwards? Like, do you set up a profile and then write the script for the person with the profile? Or do you write the script and then the profile? Like...
Yeah, I feel like it would kind of have to be... You'd have to come up with the person first, the profile, and then write the script around it. Because, like, I guess that would most similarly mimic just real life, where, like, you have a person who already is a person and they are who they are, and then their actions reflect that. So I guess, mm-hmm. like, in terms of writing, that would be, like, for me, like, we're gonna have a killer who's like this, X, Y, and Z, and now we have to kind of, like, drop those hints in his MO and clues he leaves mm-hmm. behind and his behavior, I guess. I don't know.
I was gonna say, yeah, you're an editor, so that would, it would make sense that you have some insight into that. Mm-hmm. So, after we get off the plane, we see Heather for the first time again, and she is, for the first time again, we see Heather again. she is caged up, in a metal box. It's kind of like a metal fence box.
Like a dog crate, almost.
Yeah, but less humane.
Yeah, it was genuinely disturbing. I was that's
really gross.
Yeah, and then when he's cutting her fingernails.
Yes, yes. Did not like that. So, she is messing with the blindfold she has on, which is just duct tape. Not a real blindfold, her just duct eyelashes. Tape all over. Right? The eyelashes and the eyebrows. Oh. No. He comes in and he's like, stop messing with the tape. And then he begins to trim her fingernails, which is kind of like a nod to people who have watched true crime or other crime procedurals, that you know a lot of the times one way they get DNA is under the fingernails. It's not really explained, but outside of there being no genetic material left on any of the bodies. But it is a very small detail that's kind of like a nod to people who would understand it, or a way to introduce a concept to people who might not. Because you can kind of tell watching it, like, oh, that's probably so she doesn't get a skin under her nails. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's an interesting way to introduce that concept to the audience. So, after that, we're back with the team. And we find out that Gideon has PTSD. It's offhandedly mentioned by Reed talking to Morgan. And it's been six months since whatever happened occurred. Around this time, Morgan starts beginning to question Gideon's sanity. He's kind of worried about, like, how is this gonna go? This is his first case back. And like, he's very...
It's funny to watch, having seen this series through, because he ends up being like that forever. Like, he was like that with mm-hmm. Hotch, and he was like that with, like, Strauss. I mean, anyone that ever yeah. went through any personal struggle, he was like that.
Yes. He yeah. is very... he questions authority a lot. That's kind of in his... makeup as a character.
I think it was maybe the episodes in New York with the people who were, like, just randomly shooting people in subway stations, where they were thinking about having Morgan lead the New York Bureau, and they asked mm-hmm. Hotch for a recommendation, and he told them that, like, he's a good agent, but he doesn't trust people. So, like, mm-hmm. it's been like that since day one. Like, he doesn't trust
yeah.
people.
I can't wait to get to that episode, because I have some thoughts on Kate.
Bailey's twin.
Yes. So So we find out that as they're talking to the detectives, we find out that Morgan specializes in obsessional crimes, and that baby-faced Agent Reed is a doctor.
I actually wrote down, because I feel bad I keep interrupting you, but where...
That's okay. That's how it works.
Where he was introduced, Special Agent Morgan, our expert in obsessional crime. But I swear, isn't at one point he's like the bomb specialist? He's like,
yes, the next episode. He's the bomb guy. Okay.
So they just hadn't really decided on who he was yet.
He becomes the expert on obsessional crimes again. At the appearance of Rossi says, Morgan, you're the expert on obsessional crimes.
Why couldn't they keep that straight?
I feel like he's had so many jobs.
Yeah, and like, he's the only one that's really ever like identified as being a specialist. Like, I know Reed is a specialist in everything, and they do introduce Elle in this episode as like a sex crimes, you know.
Yes.
But, like, as far as the BAU goes, like, no one else really had, like, a specialty.
No. Yeah, that is something of note, especially because of, it's not consistent throughout the show.
Just pick someone else. It's always him that they're changing, which is odd.
Like, I'm pretty sure it is the very next episode that he is the bomb guy. Like, I think he works for ATF or something at some point.
Yeah.
But.
So strange. All right.
Very much so. In this point, we don't know that Gideon is the section chief, but he does seem to be the guy in charge, as he is the one kind of talking to the police. And then we see that Boston is elaborated. When they are looking at the first crime scene, Gideon caught an unsub in Boston, but lost 6 agents in the process. So that is where his PTSD stems from. So, Morgan and Gideon are profiling the last crime scene, and they're talking about, you can kind of see already the differences that they have in how they're talking. It's a little, not like argumentative, but you can tell that he's kind of questioning. They are also talking, but there is an edge of tension between the two of them, mm-hmm. especially after Morgan says, we have a unit chief at the edge of a nervous breakdown, and Gideon comes in and is like, they don't call them that anymore.
That's so good. Yeah. I love that. And the best part was then Reed tried to be like, oh, they call them. He's like, I know.
The next part that we see is Reed and Hotch are interviewing Heather's brother, David. And Reed elaborates to this man that his doctorate is 3 PhDs, and he is a genius with an eidetic memory. As they're interviewing Heather's brother, Reed finds a magazine with, it's like a Dotson magazine, and there's a Dotson Z on the cover. And somehow he took that one magazine in the stack of pile of magazines and was like, that's what he did. It's a car guy.
Yeah, that made me laugh too. I was like, wow, isn't that convenient?
This one magazine and a pile of magazines is the answer to our problem.
I wouldn't call it great detective work, but like, just perhaps lazy writing.
just a tad. So the agents are all discussing the case while Gideon thinks kind of off to himself. And then Gideon announces to, the BAU that they're ready to present the profile while the others are still arguing about what the profile is. And this is when Morgan gets upset and says that Gideon is having a nervous breakdown. And Gideon is out of the room at the time, but Gideon walks into the room at the end of that, and Gideon says, they don't call them that anymore, which is what we were referring to earlier. And then Reed corrects him and says it's a major depressive episode. So the next part that we see is Gideon giving the profile to the police. And so that's kind of just, I don't write much about that because profile's profile. You know, you're here to listen to us talk about the show, but that's a lot of extra writing I didn't want to do. So they give the profile. And the next thing we see is a woman approaching a house, asking if someone can help her look inside a house because she's scared. She came back, the door was open, and the lights weren't working.
Oh, see, I didn't catch the comment about the lights not working, and one of the comments I wrote was, why do they use flashlights? It's just turning the damn lights on. I mean, why? Okay, cleared that one up.
So, an older woman answers the door, but she calls up the stairs for someone named Richard. So, upon entering the house with this woman, Richard is apprehended by the FBI and is identified as Richard Sussman, the top suspect that they had, as in the profile, one thing we should mention, is that Gideon said that he was sure that the detectives had already profiled or already interviewed this guy because he was the type of profile that would inject himself into the investigation. Mm-hmm. The woman who brought him in was in on it, and she's introduced as Elle Greenaway with a background in sex crimes. Another backstory piece for Morgan is that he teaches hand-to-hand at Quantico.
I will say they do kind of keep that shtick up.
They do with Emily and JJ. So
I know he remember him working with Prentice. Yeah, I did have a question about why they didn't just like go to that house and arrest him, and why they set up that sting. That seemed like an odd choice to me.
So Elle says in the episode that she never sends SWAT into a house with children, and that is why they lured him out of the house.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. All right, good writing. I missed it.
Elle wants the opening and the team at the BAU, and so this is kind of her case to prove herself as worthy to join the team. So she's not working a little harder, but she is more focused on than just a random agent who happens to be working with them. You know that she will be a part of the team because mm-hmm. she has that main character kind of framing about her. Like, the scenes are framed so that she's not like, she's part of this but only for this episode. It's, you can tell that she's going to be a recurring character. Mm-hmm. So they profile the room in the house. They find a computer, and the locals enter a password they find on a piece of paper.
Because 2004 or whatever.
The password is incorrect, and it enacts a computer defense system, which gives them only 6 attempts to try and break into the computer before it will wipe the hard drive. Which is a cute little way to introduce our favorite technical analyst, Penelope Garcia. A little bit later, Morgan has to call Penelope, who is the Office of Supreme Genius, and ask how to break into Deadbolt. And she tells him that he has reached the Office of Too Freaking Bad, because Deadbolt can't be broken into.
She has been a gem from day one, but yes. Clearly they hadn't, like, I actually read when I was doing some research on this episode that she was basically only going to be in this episode. Mm-hmm. She was just kind of like a throwaway character, but she had such good chemistry with Shamar Moore that they ended up keeping her forever. But
I love that.
Yeah, but her sweater vest left something to be desired. I was like,
it's so not her. Like
I'm like, what have they done with Penelope Garcia?
This is not my Penelope.
No. So they were still figuring her out, I guess.
Definitely. They definitely turned her into a beautiful character as the mm-hmm. show went on. The first episode, they did not pay attention to detail whatsoever.
No. She had lipstick on.
Which makes sense.
So yeah. I'll give her that.
She had glasses.
Yeah. We'll give her
This is about the only things that have stayed the same.
Yeah.
So, they are in an attic. I don't know if he lives in the attic or if that's just where he keeps his board games.
That was just, like, his man cave. Yeah, right? That was unclear. Because I think Morgan's, what he said was, this is a boy's room, not a man's room.
Yes.
When they were in the bedroom. So they went mm-hmm. upstairs. They found that Chinese game that he was playing.
Yes.
Which is where the episode comes from. But then, mm-hmm. like, they went, also then they were back downstairs, and so I was, like, a little unclear. Yeah.
So, yeah, as you were saying, he was playing against himself in a Chinese game called Go, and Reed profiles the moves that he's making as the playstyle of the extreme aggressor, which is where we get the episode title from.
I want to put, like, audio special effects that are like, woo! Because I love when they say the name of stuff. Like, they said it the name.
While they are profiling the room, Gideon finds an article in a book with a picture of himself titled Blast Kill 6, which we can connect to the ongoing storyline of the tragic event that he went through where six agents died in Boston when he was trying to apprehend a criminal. So we know now that it was a blast. So it's like every piece we get, like, they're giving breadcrumbs to the storyline. He decides that he wants to talk to Slesman after seeing this article inside of a book that had a paper that Gideon wrote. So he had the book, and inside the book he had an article. So it's like, wham bam, Gideon.
Yeah, he knew who he was.
Yeah, for sure. And so while they're talking, he brings up Heather, and Slesman says, isn't she the girl who went missing? After the interview, you can tell that Gideon is a little rattled after talking to Slesman. And he also brings up the fact that the suspect he was trying to apprehend in Boston was Adrian Bale. He asks Slesman if he's a fan of Adrian Bale's work, and Slesman says he is a fan of Gideon's work. So, they, you can tell that Gideon is a little rattled after the interview, and Hodge comes up to kind of talk to him and be like, are you okay? Like, what's going on? Gideon's a little defensive, but he also brings up the fact that Richard said, isn't she the girl that went missing, not wasn't she, which indicates that she is still alive. And in Gideon's defensiveness, Hotch brings up that Gideon can't be two people at once. And then you get this...
the light bulb moment.
Right? Like the Raven Simone sees a vision moment. Yeah. Of, like, realizing that the conflicts in the profile are the fact that there is not one unsub, but two. Which, is notable because they can't find Heather on the property. So it kind of gives them an out for not finding her, basically. Like, oh, she's not here because there's somebody else. So they profile the second unsubbed as the dominant and the kind of schoolyard bully that takes the weak person under his wing to do his bidding. Like the quintessential... like in A Christmas Story, the bully has his little lackey. Mm-hmm. Very that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, because Slesman is, like, so scrawny. Like, he has yes. the body of, like, a 14-year-old boy. So he's not out there abducting women by himself.
Exactly that. And I did write that Richard Slesman is played by DJ Qualls, who played Garth Fitzgerald on Supernatural for many seasons. I don't know. I haven't seen Supernatural. I'll say it. I haven't seen it. but I know enough to know that he is someone on the show. Like, I don't know how important he is, but he was known for it on IMDb, so...
Works for me.
So, Gideon and Elle decide to go to Cascadia Prison, where Richard was held on a different charge that I didn't catch in the episode. to get information about Richard's old cellmate, Charles Linder. Charles was brought up by Richard's grandmother, who said that the only friend that Slesman ever had was a guy named Charlie.
Which brought me to my favorite part of the entire episode, was when Gideon just says to Elle, cross-reference Charlie. Cross-reference with what? With what? What does that even mean? And she's just like, oh, got it. I'm like, what the hell is happening? Like, they needed Garcia at that point. Like,
cross-reference, like, Charlie.
I don't know if it's just because, like, we have more knowledge about how that type of, like, internet search or, like, database searching works than they did back in the early, mid-2000s. But I was just like, cross-reference Charlie. What does that even mean? And it works. Spoiler alert.
It's like the 90s episodes of Crime TV where they have, like, a blurry image of someone and they zoom in and it's crystal clear. Yeah. Like, that's not real.
Yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah, I'm like, okay. We know how technology works.
So they're on their way to, they arrive at the prison, and I'm laughing so hard because of the drama that Elle brings to, Linder is dead.
Oh my God, I had that written down. I had it in quotes, Linder's dead. Dramatic zoom in on Gideon's face. He's just like looking off into the distance. Like,
it's very, the brunette, whoever the brunette is on the show, has to bring that drama with their, how they talk. Like, mm-hmm. It's very Elle, very Prentice. Linder's dead.
Yeah. It was a moment.
And then the music swells, and I'm pretty sure there's a commercial break right there, too.
Oh, my God.
So, they find out as they get to the prison that Linder is dead. And so they instead ask to talk to whoever would have been closest to Slesman when he was there. And the, what is it? What are they called? Like, the prison?
Like, correctional leaders? Officers? Yeah, like a CO?
No, like the leader of the prison.
Oh, the warden.
Yes! The prison leader.
President of the prison.
So the warden points them to, he calls him a security guard.
He called the correctional officer a security guard?
Yes.
I didn't even catch that.
He was like, Tim Vogel was the security guard, assigned to Slesman's block. And I was like, security guard? Oh
my, this isn't an American high school. It's a jail. No.
This isn't a mall. Ooh, that got me. Okay. So as they are talking to Mr. Tim Vogel, he talks about, you get these kind of quasi, like, microaggressions, like, that white guy in this prison? And it's like, alright, we get it. You're a little racist. And then he talks about protecting a scrawny white guy in the prison, and they're like, the guy we're talking about is 6'3". Who are you talking about? Obviously, Slesman. And then when he is taking them out of the prison, he unlocks the door with his keys, and they zoom in on the keys, and they walk out the door, and they're like, he fits the profile! And did you see him? The keys. And then they go back to the keys, and there's a slow pan down, and you see a Z on the keys. And the boom, dots and Z. So then we go back to Morgan and Reed, and they're trying to find the password to Slesman's computer by looking through his CD collection.
CD collection. Start there. So many CDs.
You know what? Let's go with the CD. So they look through.
There was a Walkman, is all I'm saying. Like, it brought me right back to, like, I guess that year, like 2004, on the bus going to school with my little, like, skip-proof CD player with the foam headphones, but it was never skip-proof. Every time you hit a pothole, it stopped. Like, it was
exactly
like,
that.
It's almost like nostalgic because I guess just at the exact age that I was at, which also begs the question, where were my parents? Who was letting me watch this at that age?
Right.
But yeah, it was when I saw that, I was just like, God, like nowadays they'd what, go through someone's Spotify playlist? Like, I don't even know.
I hope so! Oh my God.
Wouldn't that be so cool?
So, spoiler alert, this show's coming back on Paramount Plus for an eight episode revival where they review a one case, and by God, I hope they look through somebody's Spotify profile.
They probably haven't written it yet. Let's let them know.
I hope that they, and I want them to have just, like, the worst off-brand name for Spotify.
Yeah.
Like, they have, like...
Like how Nickelodeon used to use Pear. I don't remember what their Pear.
Facebook is. Yes! iCarly is back. Yes. And they, call Postmates, like, Post Rabbit or something like that.
Like Task Rabbit
and Postmate. Yeah.
Funny.
And...
don't want to pay those royalties, man.
No, and it's funny because they're so obvious about it, but Dan Schneider is not involved, so you can watch it guilt-free.
Not an ad.
lost my place. Oh. I just looked at my notebook, and in all caps, I wrote, "What's a make?" Before we get there. So Morgan and Reed are trying to find the password looking through his CDs, and Reed is twirling around this little paper clip in his hand, and they make sure to zoom in on it to be like, look how cool he is twirling that paper clip. And he pokes it into the CD player, into the laptop, and out pops a CD that they had not gone through, because they'd gone through every other CD. They couldn't find anything to fit the profile somehow. And they take the CD out, and it's a Metallica CD. And so he's like, which track would speak to an insomniac? And Reed says, Enter Sandman. And boom, boom, got another break. So we don't know where that's going. And yeah. When we come back, L wants to pull over the Datsun Z. And Gideon mentions that the thing that pops up most in her case or her background or whatever, jacket maybe, I don't know, is that she is impulsive. He makes her give.
We do see that in later
episodes. Yeah, I'd call her impulsive. And so he asks her for a reason to pull him over, and she profiles his driving behavior, the fact that he is not rushing to dump a body, he's just kind of driving, and so, Gideon gives her the go-ahead to switch on the lights, and they pull him over, only to realize that it is not Vogel. It is somebody that he works with, and the co-worker, Vogel asked to borrow his truck, and... That is when Gideon screams, what's a make? What's a make?
Yeah. He goes, like, to very, like, his one hand where he does that, where he's just, like, intense, mm-hmm. and then, like, mm-hmm. other times where he's, like, really quiet and kind of in his own head, and it's just, mm-hmm. they really went all in on the Gideon lore in this episode.
I love that. Gideon lore.
Like, they're trying to build it.
This man has a background.
Yeah.
So then we are back to Morgan and Reed, and they broke the password with Enter Sandman and find a video feed of Heather locked up when splicing the last few. That's another thing that they should have had Garcia do.
Slowing down the clips.
Yes, they splice together, the last so many images, and Reed notices that the light is shifting back and forth, and that's when Morgan realizes she's on the ocean.
I don't know why this has stuck with me so, like, all-consuming for so many years. Like, that image and revelation is just so ingrained in my mind. Like, if I ever have to rescue someone, the first thing I'll be doing is staring at the light bulbs and any pictures. Like, yeah. Because it was just, I'm like, oh, that's so smart. Like, I never would have noticed that. But now I will.
Right. Exactly. Another thing that the show teaches us.
Mm-hmm. Always check the light bulbs.
So, Hotch is then called by Morgan. Telling him, hey, she's on a boat, but we're not going to be able to figure out where. That's on you, buddy, because he's interviewing Slesman. And Hodge goes, what is it you always ask, Garcia? And Morgan goes, to work me a little magic. And it's it's such a quintessential, like,
Yep, I loved it. Also, I feel like Hotch is a little softer in this episode than he is in future episodes, like even like the next one. I feel like
he's closer to Greg than he is Hotch.
Yeah.
So Elle and Gideon arrive at the shipyard. Hotch gets the location out of Richard. So he walks in on the interview room and does the whole Vogel's talking, and he's nailing you to the wall, and Slesman's just kind of like, psh, whatever, and then Hotch is like, he said it was your idea to put him on a boat, and you just see Slesman's eyes get big, and it's like, oh no, this is it, and so he reveals that she's on a boat at a shipyard. So then Elle and Gideon arrive at the shipyard. And as they do, Reed and Morgan see that Vogel is inside the boat through the video feed that they are able to see, and they call Elle. They tell her to wait for backup, and they do the whole, if we had waited in Boston, but they rush in, and as he is grabbing Heather to take her and kill her, Heather is able to fight back and run. She actually makes it all the way up the boat without him catching her.
With a blindfold on.
With a blindfold on. And go, girl. Then duct tape blindfold. So as soon as, of course, as soon as she gets on the dock or pier or the wood in the water, he catches her right as Gideon's, you know, got his gun up, like, Gideon decides to aggravate Vogel into shooting him instead,
with the greatest Gideon line of ever. Do you think I'm stupid? I think you're an absolute moron. Like, amazing.
And then the final line that gets Vogel to shoot at Gideon is, what is it the girls used to call you when they would get in your pants and see how little you had to offer? Short stack, very little Vogel. I got it. Tiny Tim.
Also amazing. Tiny Tim.
As Vogel shoots at Gideon, Gideon is wounded, winged, gets him in the arm. But Elle shoots Vogel, like, 6 times. And so he's, like, super dead. She goes to Gideon, and Gideon's like, go to the girl. And it's, like, such a fatherly way of just, like, I'm fine, go to the girl.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they get the girl, and she's a really great actress. She, like, went above and beyond the bit actor. She, like, her facials were really good, especially I noticed when they were putting her in the ambulance, she was looking at Gideon and she was kind of like, you could see like the sadness in her eyes, and she was like kind of pouting, and I was like, that is something that like another actor would have just been like stone-faced, and there's actually some emotion there, so I appreciated that in her acting ability.
Yeah, she's good.
And then Morgan trusts Gideon now in a very, a very circular plotline. Mm. Morgan decides that Gideon saved that girl, so he's good in my book. So then we are back on the plane, as every episode begins and ends on the plane. And Hotch and Gideon are talking, and Gideon asks Hotch how his review is going, expressing that he knew the entire time he was being reviewed on this case, and says, didn't think you could keep that from an old profile, did ya? It's like such an old-timey prospector voice that just like cracks me up. And they talk about baby names, and the fact that every baby name Haley presented, he was reminded of a serial killer, so like Jeffrey, Dahmer, Henry, Lee Lucas, mm-hmm. which is funny, because JJ's son's name is Henry.
Oh, yeah!
she wasn't thinking about that.
I thought it was funny when they were talking about baby names at the beginning, and he joked about calling it Sergio, and I was like, Emily's cat!
Right? I thought that too! Like, they really were just like, names we've said before, we're naming those things later. So, the episode ends in a very dramatic and cliffhangery way. So, Gideon is driving, and he stops at a gas station in Dumfries, Virginia. He goes inside to pay for his gas, and he sees Polaroids all over the cashier's wall. And when the cashier returns Gideon's money, he has a stutter. Gideon returns to his car and is followed by the cashier. He notices in a mirror at the gas pump, the cashier has a shotgun. The gun is cocked, and the episode ends. And that is the end of the first episode of Criminal Minds, Extreme Aggressor.
I want to know if some random person who wasn't... Because I noticed that they show the gas station clerk noticing Gideon's gun. And So I just am curious if, like, I had stopped for gas there and I was like, hey, what are all those weird pictures behind you? Like, what the answer would be? Because there's, right. like, I have no idea what his reasoning could possibly be to have that at his workplace. Does he own the gas station?
The answer would be a shotgun to your head.
Oh, my God.
And that was another thing that I forgot to mention, was that when he was giving the profile about the footpath killer left Polaroids on, like, the foreheads of all of his victims. Mm-hmm. So the Polaroids was another kind of gotcha thing that Gideon saw. But, yeah, that's how it ends. And that's how this podcast is going to end, talking about the episode. We have a few more things to talk about outside of the timeline of the episode, but we are not going to talk about what happens next until the next episode.
Yeah. A fun fact about the actor who played the footpath killer, Lucas Haas, he apparently originally auditioned for Reed.
What?
I know. And then
that is so interesting.
Yeah, I'm glad we got Matthew Gray Goobler.
Oh, he's so attractive.
He's just so cute. And, I mean, he's, like, very precious and nerdy now, and then he gets very handsome.
Yes, he is very baby-faced now. It's just, like, cute, but then, like, as time goes on, you're like, oh, shit.
Shamar Moore.
Wait a minute. What's happening? Like, that TikTok of the girl, it was, like, they had this beautiful man only for all the girls to simp for this nerd over here. It's so true. Like, I remember being in middle school talking to a girl who was a grade above me, and we were just like fangirling over Matthew Gray Goobler and how attractive he was.
Yeah, I remember I sat through what is maybe the one of the worst movies I've ever seen. It's called How to Be a Serial Killer, and he's in it. I think it's like mockumentary type, like, horror movie. It was so bad. Mm-hmm. But he was in it, and I watched it just for him when I was in, like, high school.
Have you seen, there's a video of he was in, like, a sexy movie, and and the girl talks about, she's like, she says something to, like, the effect of, I was a bad girl. He's like, you were a bad girl. And I was like, wait a minute,
Dr. Reed.
Wait a minute.
All the actors in this, I'll never see outside of, like,
no,
these roles, even though they've done things before, they'll do things after, but, like, especially, like, I'll see, I mean, I guess, you know, she's not on it yet, but Padgett Brewster on, like, Friends when she's dating...
Yes!
Joey?
Chandler and Joey. Yeah. She dates them both.
And I'm like, oh, Prentice!
Like, right?
A decade before she was ever on the show.
Right?
Oh, another fun fact. The CD that they find, the Metallica one, apparently does not have the song Enter Sandman on it. Which seems like a really, really easily fact-checkable detail.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. They tried.
I love that for them. I love that for the props department.
They're just like, this looks Metallica. And I also have a list of all the real life killers they mentioned.
Okay.
They really name dropped in this one.
They really did.
They referenced George Metesky, the Mad Bomber, which I don't remember. John Allen Muhammad and Lee Boyd Malvo, the DC Snipers. Classic duo. just in the theme of partners, I guess.
Yeah.
Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber. They mentioned Ted Bundy twice. The Lipstick Killer, I really thought I was, like, a genius when there's the shot where they show the woman's computer who went missing, and it had the, like, please stop me before I kill again or whatever, like, and I was like, oh, it's the Lipstick Killer, and I thought I was a genius for knowing that, and then they immediately were like, oh, it's the Lipstick Killer, which, for some reason...
Well, you are still a genius. They had to explain that to everyone else. That makes you even more of a genius, because they were like, these plebes aren't going to know what this is from. Like, and you did. And you should be proud of that.
I am. I do question why Gideon had a framed photo of that crime scene in his office. But
with all the awards and commendations, and it's just a picture of a crime scene.
Like,
and not only that, with a description underneath it.
They just, you know... Just in case people didn't know. They mention David Berkowitz, son of Sam. Lawrence Bittaker and Ray Norris, the Toolbox Killers. Charles Manson, like you said. Henry Lee Lucas, like you said. And Jeffrey Dahmer, like you mentioned. So, all talking about names for Jack. Oh, spoiler alert, they named the baby Jack.
Dahmer. Jack Dahmer. Boom. Got it anyway. I don't know why people call him Jack Dahmer. I mean, I haven't done enough investigating into that. I just listen to podcasts, but...
Yeah. I don't get why Jack is short for John. Like, John Kennedy, everyone called him Jack. Like, that's odd to me.
I don't get that. Yeah. No.
If anyone out there can explain that.
Yes, please do. In fact, you can do that at our email address that I haven't set up yet.
But we'll be in the show notes.
Yes, it will be. This is Calm and It's Doctor at gmail.com. You can send us any information you have about upcoming episodes that you would like us to mention. If you have met anyone on the cast or talked to anyone who's working on the show, we would love to hear those stories. but yeah.
Well, we can end it with the final quote from Gideon.
Yes.
Which I had written down as, Nietzsche once said, when you look long into an abyss, the abyss looks into you.
And that's it, folks. That is the first episode of Criminal Minds and the first episode of our podcast about Criminal Minds. This has been really fun. I'm glad we're doing this. We kind of got the inspiration from a Facebook group that we are both in, talking about someone asking for a podcast, and I had been thinking about starting one anyway, and Tanner very supportively said, I will be your co-host. And while there were a few other people who wanted the spot, being the first person to ask to be the co-host, I wasn't gonna ask anyone else, because I knew, like, as soon as you said something, I was like, yes, this is the person I'm gonna do it with. Like, this is, we're locking it in, we're doing this. Another title for the show was going to be Wheels Up, but there is a Wheels Up podcast, so we couldn't do that.
Is it about planes?
I feel like it's about planes. I didn't look much into it, but it's not a Criminal Minds podcast, which is upsetting.
Seriously, they don't even know. Especially because that becomes, like, they really lean into that in the later seasons.
And then, I don't know if you saw it, but I posted in the group one time, there was, a rap song called Wheels Up.
Oh my god, why isn't that our intro and outro music?
There is, like, this, there's, like, white boy rapper, and he's rapping Wheels Up, or, and it's a song about Hotch. And
Shut up!
The entire cast is in it!
What?
Like, the entire cast is in the video! Like, they filmed it on the plane!
I can't wait to watch that as soon as we finish this.
It's so funny! Like, it feels like a fever dream, and... There's, like, Prentice and JJ have, like, their guns out, and they're, like, back-to-back, and, like...
Oh, my God, for anyone... If you're looking for it on YouTube, I think it's the one that's called Wheels Up, and then in parentheses, The Hotch Song.
Yes, which, that is exactly what it is.
Oh, my God, starring Haven Merker, which is perhaps the rapper, and then Thomas Gibson, mm-hmm. Joe Mantegna, Shamar Moore, Padgett Brewster, like, everyone's in it. That's amazing.
Yeah. He has another song, I think it's called, like, Baby Girl or something. It's about Penelope, but I don't know what he did to get this done, but it's hilarious, and I love it. And I want the best for that man.
Same, I hope he's thriving. Oh my gosh.
But that is going to be it for today. And if you want to get in contact with us, our email is thisiscompodcast@gmail.com. You can let us know any of your, things you know about the show, if you met anyone from the show, if you know anyone who's worked on it. Just let us know any, like, facts you have about the show. You can email us at... Again, This Is Calm Podcast. We're also on Instagram and Twitter as This Is Calm Pod. So if you want to connect with us, that's where you can do so.
Yeah. I'll see you next time.